It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. The gubernatorial race has been called for Tony Evers, although Scott Walker has not yet conceded. The race for attorney general doesn't have a clear winner either. Meanwhile, Republican Brian Stile has claimed victory in the 1st Congressional District, and all of the congressional incumbents across Wisconsin secured their next terms in Wisconsin, in Washington. And Tammy Baldwin has been reelected to the U.S. Senate, defeating GOP challenger Leah Vukmir. Women filed, ran for, and won nominations in record numbers this year. We turn to a political scientist to evaluate what this means for politics moving forward and consider the challenges female candidates and workers faced this campaign season. Women, did you run for office? What was your experience like? Why did you choose to run? Did you work for or volunteer for a campaign? What was that like? Did it differ from past years? How do you think this increase of women running for office played out here in Wisconsin? And do you think women need more representation? Why or why not? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email is ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Kelly Dittmar is an assistant professor of political science at Rutgers University Camden and a scholar at the Center for American Women and Politics at the Eagleton Institute of Politics. She's also the author of Navigating Gendered Terrain, Stereotypes and Strategy in Political Campaigns, and co-author of the book A Seat at the Table, Congresswomen's Perspectives on Why Their Presence Matters. Kelly, welcome to the morning show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Set the stage for us. What kind of numbers are we talking about when it comes to women who filed, ran for, and got nominated by a party for political office this year?
Sure. So we broke records in terms of women's engagement and candidacy across all levels of office this year. Just to give you an example, for the U.S. House, a previous record for the number of women who filed was 298 women. This year we had 476. So we didn't just break the record, we really shattered it. And then when we got to those who won their primaries, we were at 235 women, again, higher than the previous record of 167. And those women were on the ballot yesterday. And then based on the results, we now have a record number of women who will serve in Congress. Now, that number is still changing. But as of this morning, we have 95 confirmed women in the U.S. House. And that will be a record because the previous record was 85. And we expect that number will go up by at least a couple of more, probably to at least just surpass or hit around 100, if not a few more, depending on how some of these other races break. So that's just one example, but those records were true across levels of office.
And when was it that, when was the last time we saw a year where we reached new levels of the representation of women in public office?
So we've seen pretty small and incremental changes for decades now. And the most significant rise we've seen in women's political representation, particularly at the congressional level, was in 1992, which was, you know, termed the Year of the Woman. And the reason why it was called the Year of the Woman in part was because of that jump from 6%, so still a very small percent of women in Congress, to about 10%. So in that year, we saw a 4 percentage point increase. If you compare that to what we're seeing this year, we started this year at 20% of women in Congress. Based on the numbers we have now, we expect we might be around 23% by the end of the day. So it's still not as big of an increase, but it's more numbers, of course, because we started with a larger pool of women. We will have the largest freshman class, so non-incumbent women who won ever, going into the 116th Congress in 2019.
Well, so I guess at the end of the day, we need to just point out that Congress is still going to basically be continue to be run by people who are old, male, and white.
Well, certainly male and white and probably old. I haven't done an age count, but yeah, I mean, it goes to show that there is a lot of work to do to get to gender parity. And we've been saying the whole election cycle, you know, we've been talking a lot about the wave or the tsunami or whatever it is. But those of us at the center have been trying to really tamp down expectations and put the numbers into context to say that even with those record numbers that I mentioned earlier of women running for the House, that was still only 25% of all of the candidates who filed to run for the U.S. House. And then when we got to nominees, women were about 28%. And as I mentioned, you know, we may be around 23% at the end of the day when all the numbers come in. And so still, despite being over 50% of the population, women will be under a quarter of those in elected office. So we've got more work to do. And hopefully this year does inspire more women to run.
Kelly Dittmar is an assistant professor of political science at Rutgers University Camden and a scholar at the Center for American Women and Politics at the Eagleton Institute of Politics. We're wondering what you think about this. Women, did you run for office? What was your experience like, and why did you choose to run? Maybe you worked for a campaign or volunteered. What was that like, and did it differ from past years? How do you think the increase of women running for office played out in Wisconsin? For example, we had two women running for U.S. Senate this year. Do you think women need more representation? Why or why not? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Kelly, what's been the driving force behind the increase we've seen in the number of women running and succeeding in races for Congress?
Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint one cause when you have such a large pool of women. Part of the beauty of that is there's great diversity among them, not only in why they're running, but also what they bring to office. One thing, for example, that you'll note from last night, we saw a high number of women of color, so greater racial and ethnic diversity among the women who won. But going back to your original question, why did they run this time? Why did they run in record numbers? Even though we can't tell a single story about women's motivation, there was certainly a thread among the Democratic progressive women who are running this year, who made up the majority of the increase and all of the gains. And that was tied to the 2016 election in some way for many of them. And it seemed to be a sort of catalyst for them to get engaged in a more formal way in politics, whether to start giving to candidates or participating in a campaign or running for office themselves. And I think that catalyst was caused largely by policy concerns. Concerns that this administration and a Republican-controlled executive and legislative branch would pull back on some of the areas of policy progress that had been made over the previous 8 years in the viewpoints of many of these women when it came to healthcare, the environment, and many other issues that really were important to them. And so you heard a lot of women candidates, especially new women candidates, talk about those issues as central to their motivation to run when they were on the campaign trail.
We're talking about the election that we had yesterday, in case you just dropped in from Mars or something and were wondering what all the hoopla was about. We had a pretty big midterm election yesterday and record numbers of women running in it. And we're talking about that this morning with Kelly Dittmar. And we want to know what you think. And particularly, we know that there were women who ran and won in Wisconsin. If you're one of them, why did you run? Why do you think you won? What was it like? If you didn't win, why do you, you know, was it a valuable experience for you? Would you do it again? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 800-642-1234. Kelly Dittmar stays with us. She's assistant professor of political science at Rutgers University, Camden. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Women filed, ran for, and won nominations this year and won elections this year, unlike any other time in America's history. We're talking about what this means for politics moving forward, and we're examining the challenges female candidates and workers faced in this campaign season. Why do you think it's important that leaders in government reflect the people they serve? What do you think women in leadership can accomplish? Did you consider gender at the ballot box? Let us know what you think. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Kelly Dittmar is Assistant Professor of Political Science at Rutgers University Camden and a scholar at the Center for American Women and Politics at the Eagleton Institute of Politics. Kelly, why does it matter that there's more female representation in government? Why is this important to increase the number of women in public office?
Yeah, so we recently wrote a book on this very topic, and we're fortunate enough, my colleagues and I, to interview 83 of the women in Congress. That's over three quarters of them, as we're talking about the low numbers, and ask them directly, what difference does it make that you're here? And I'd like to sort of point to three areas that they referenced, and that's also true in the existing research that shows why it matters to have more equal representation. One area is the sort of symbolic impact and perception of the institution as an institution that represents you and me. So the women we spoke with really felt honored, but also felt a responsibility to show future generations that that public leaders can look like them, can look like women, can look like women of color, can look like women across different ages. And that hopefully helps a wider pool of people consider their own possibility of running for office someday. A second reason is because there's a substantive policy difference, not just in impossible outcomes, but also in the conversations that are being had in Congress. So what different life experiences and perspectives do women bring? And often those perspectives are not just distinct to gender, but they're layered with race and ethnicity and class. And what that does is it brings issues to the agenda as well as expands the conversation in ways that wouldn't happen had women not been there.
A lot of history was made last night, aside from the number of women who won their races. What did we see in terms of diversity? A lot of history made here.
Yeah, definitely. Of the new women I mentioned earlier in the House already, 40 of 95 of them that have already won are women of color. So across all different races and ethnicities, included in there are the first two Native American women ever elected to the U.S. Congress, Deb Haaland in New Mexico and Charisse Davids in Kansas, as well as the two first Muslim women to serve in Congress, Ilhan Omar in Minnesota, and in Michigan, Rashida Tlaib. In addition, there were four states that elected their first women of color to Congress, so Minnesota, as I mentioned, as well as Massachusetts and Connecticut and Kansas. And then we also elected last night our first Democratic woman of color governor ever in Michelle Lujan Grisham in New Mexico. So many of the milestones that we were celebrating yesterday were really tied specifically to not only increasing women's representation overall, but diversifying the women who are in office. And that's really important if we're going to better reflect the population.
How have women challenged the norms of campaigning in the midterms?
Yeah, I think that this is another measure for success. So, you know, we spent a lot of time counting the numbers and talking about records. But women who ran this cycle, particularly those who were running for the first time or, you know, were part of this surge of women's energy and enthusiasm, really came into campaigns very authentically. And I mean in that they were willing to embrace their gender, their race, and even their vulnerabilities, you know, whether they had debt or they had struggles previously in life. They embraced all of that and said, brings value to my leadership and to my policymaking. And so instead of trying to adapt to what has been a pretty stereotypically male white norm of what political leaders should look like and how candidates should behave and what sorts of issues they should be talking about, a lot of the women this cycle threw out that playbook and said, I shouldn't have to adapt to the institution. Perhaps the institution should adapt to me. And so you saw women really offer a new model of candidacy. And I think that'll translate into both their office holding as well as into getting more women and, again, more diverse women to run because they can see different ways in which they can be successful without having to sacrifice part of themselves.
How did the Me Too movement factor into all of this? Did it play a significant role in these campaigns, and did it hurt or help?
I think when I was mentioning sort of the vulnerabilities and authenticity, some of the women talked about their own Me Too stories on the campaign trail as an example of that, right? They would say, look, this happened to me, and it makes me stronger, and it also makes me better understand the struggles that unfortunately so many women face. So in that way, I think women talked about Me Too in an open way to connect with voters and to demonstrate their own resiliency. On the other hand, they also, I think, tapped into the energy around the country around the Me Too movement, where women broadly were saying, we need to stand up against this imbalance of power, particularly between men and women in all of our institutions, and call out the abuses of those power, the abuse of that power. And in politics, this is just another place in which they manifested some of that energy and said, well, again, we need to make our voices heard. And some of those women did that through candidacy.
Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh's nomination process was contentious, to say the least, for many. It felt like a test of how our nation perceives and treats decades-old assault. For others, it felt like an 11th-hour partisan reputation-destroying attack on Kavanaugh. How did this factor into the campaigns that women ran?
That's really hard, right? It was sort of a last-minute addition, right? So it's hard to know just how much it factored in. What it seemed to do was energize men and women on both sides of the aisle, but really within their own camps, right? It didn't seem to shift opinion too much, but perhaps may have increase the enthusiasm or sense of urgency among some of the voters. And so did it help with turnout for some candidates potentially, but again, it may have sort of canceled out because from what we could see from the polls, it was having that sort of energizing effect both for Republicans who were excited about his candidacy and angry with how the Democrats dealt with it, as well as among Democrats, particularly women who felt like this was yet another example of the Republican Party not listening to women and not taking their struggles and their experiences seriously.
Kelly Dittmar is an assistant professor of political science at Rutgers University Camden and a scholar at the Center for American Women and Politics at the Eagleton Institute of Politics. We are talking about the fact that it was an historic night for women running for public office across the United States. The very first woman ever elected governor of South Dakota was elected last night, among other women who won. Again, we keep harping on this, but it's an issue. This was a record-setting night for women. But to really see parity between men and women in Congress, how far do we still have to go?
Yeah, so obviously in Congress, we still have to basically at least double women's representation after this year to get to parity. With governors, we're probably going to be at 9 women governors this year. So we need to get to 25. And even in our state legislatures, we don't have all those numbers tallied yet. But we expect that we'll still have a lot of ways to go. That means that we have to think about this as a long game. And ensure that the energy that we've seen among women in this cycle continues. And one other thing that's really important is that there's a huge partisan disparity, and it only grew larger last night in terms of women's representation. We actually lost Republican women in Congress last night. So at the end of the day, when all the tallies are in, we will see a record number of women overall, but fewer Republican women than we saw in the last Congress. And so we're not going to get to gender parity in politics on one side of the aisle. We have to figure out what needs to be done to ensure that more Republican women are running and can be successful, because there are certainly districts across this country that are going to always lean red. And if we want to ensure that women's voices are also represented in those places, we need to work on recruiting and supporting Republican women as well.
And where are these candidates going to come from? Is that the big issue here? How do we recruit more women? Do you think that what happened this year will encourage more women to run?
I do think it will, and I hope that it will, for a number of reasons. One, just because there was a lot more attention paid to both the dearth of women's representation as well as the energy of the women who ran this cycle and sort of why they ran and why it's so important. So I hope that that inspires other women to run. I also hope the ways in which they ran, again, as sort of true to themselves, show to other women that they can run in ways that are authentically true to themselves, they can be successful, and that it's worth the run. And so I hope that they will consider running for office in the future.
Kelly Dittmar, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Rutgers University Camden and a scholar at the Center for American Women and Politics at the Eagleton Institute of Politics. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.